This is a cyclone weather alert. Ladies and gentlemen, radar.
Go back to Hall after an 8-yard run. Look at him follow the quarterback. Purdy through the hole.
Back in the end zone. Caught. It's touchdown. It's Charlie Kohler.
Welcome to a special edition Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Chris Williams and Jared Stansberry bring you insight and analysis of Matt Campbell's Iowa State Cyclones and their postseason matchups.
Just take it one time.
Coverage is brought to you by Fairway Meat and Grocery, Graphite Construction Group, the DraftKings Sportsbook at Wild Rose Casino, and by the Iowa Clinic and Iowa Clinic Men's Center.
And Wongo across midfield. Burkins, the kicker, couldn't get him. Can Washington? He shoves him out of bounds.
So Ellinger has to be quick here, able to avoid the rush, pressured, and Ellinger's brought down by Latrell Bankston.
Fanatics, thanks for your support all season long. To our corporate sponsors, Patreons, readers, listeners, we couldn't do it without you. And now, please welcome your hosts, Chris Williams and Jared Stansberry.
We went together, decided it should be forever. Two paychecks were better than one.
Stansberry, have you ever heard this song by Mark Chestnut?
I have not.
You seriously never heard this song?
No, I've never heard this song.
This song is a classic. It's called Going Through the Big D. So Mark Chestnut, a big artist in the 90s, is unfortunately he's getting a divorce.
I'm going through the big D and don't mean Dallas. I can't believe what the judge had to tell us. I got the Jeep, she got the palace. I'm going through the big D and don't mean Dallas.
I'm
going
to guess that Mark Chestnut's probably the only person to ever refer to divorce as the big D.
Mark Chestnut's a classic, classic voice man. Welcome to the second of our two-part postseason preview podcast series. Thanks to the great Sage Rosenfels for joining us in episode number one. If you have not listened to that, you can check it out on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. On your Friday, it is Big 12 Championship Eve. Thanks to our friends from LandJet for getting us down to Dallas safely yesterday. They were fantastic to work with, and you should check them out at LandJet.com. They are kind of like becoming like the exclusive like Cyclone Fanatic like transportation mode. Like, why the hell would you want to fly in an airplane when you could do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been in here working. You were able to show me the Montreal screw job.
Yeah.
Able to drink beer. Like, I don't think it could get any better.
Sipped on a little Cody Road.
Yeah.
Oh, really good stuff. Thank you to them. Thank you to all of our presenting sponsors of our postseason coverage here with the Cyclones. We'll find out on Sunday where Iowa State is going to a bowl game. Clearly, we have to see what happens tomorrow before we know that. I want to specifically thank our friends at the Graphite Construction Group, a brand new sponsor. We've never heard them on the Cyclone Fanatic podcast before. There's a reason they've got a new name. They used to be Rochon Corporation of Iowa. That is now the Graphite Construction Group. They're just a general contractor. They do commercial buildings, retail centers, offices, schools, all kinds of great stuff. So thank you, and you can learn more at GraphiteGRP.com. GraphiteGRP.com. The DraftKings Sportsbook at Wild Rose Casino in Jefferson. Phenomenal. And then, of course, the Iowa Clinic Men's Center and our friends from Fairway. Jay Jordan coming up. We are going to end this podcast with some minor basketball talk. Not a ton. We're down here for football. Excuse me, Rob Gray will have a lot of coverage from that tonight. Jared and I will obviously be locked in on that too. But it'll be a late night with that one with an 8 o'clock tip and then an early day for us tomorrow with an 11 a.m. kickoff. So Rob's going to kind of be the man with the plan. As far as hoops go, Connor Ferguson will be at Hilton Coliseum tonight with the Iowa State women. I wanted to just talk about something real quick before we get to Jay Jordan, when we're going to go really in-depth on this football game coming up tomorrow. Sage's interview yesterday was more of an overview of, you know, how did Iowa State get here? Jay's deal today is going to be more of a breakdown of the game.
It's Jay doing itself. Jay things.
Yes, more of a breakdown of Jay and all that good. Yeah, Jay's in-depth, you know, all that really good stuff. Anyways, I actually think it's just, I think it's been fascinating the last couple days. Is like Iowa State, like we're always so used to Iowa State being the little guy.
Yeah.
Now they're the big conference villain that's keeping Cincinnati and Coastal Carolina down. It's crazy, like how, like what a turn of events it is.
It's the funniest thing of all time. I'm gonna be completely honest. I'm all for the group of five teams. I support them.
It doesn't sound like it the way you just set it up. It's like a guy saying, "With all due respect," and then you take a huge dump all over somebody.
Yeah, with all due respect, shut up.
It's fair.
It's just one of those, man. This is what's making me mad about it is because it's like, I don't understand why these national media people are so like worked up about the group of five. Why? Like is it that they get this, you know, I don't know. I don't want to use.
Yeah. They get
eggplant emoji over the group of five for no reason in my mind.
Yeah. I don't know. The only frustrating part to me, like, where were you guys at in August? Like, didn't you see all this happening? Like, I've been screaming for them to expand the playoff because of COVID.
Right.
For months now. Like, this would have been a great year to experiment. I would have loved to have seen, like, get all the Power 5 champs in because mm-hmm. Ohio State doesn't belong. I'm sorry. Like, they didn't play enough games. Like,
right.
They're going to get in, and that's fine. And I understand that they could win. They're really good, whatever. They still don't belong playing that amount of games, in my opinion. Now, there's other people who will make the art, but whatever. Wouldn't this have been the perfect year to have the Power 5 champs, top group of five, and then two at-large? Wouldn't this have been the perfect year to just try that out?
Yes.
Everybody's down in revenue. Why wouldn't you want to make more money if you're the college football playoff?
And I just don't understand how someone can sit there and justify Ohio State getting in and being like, well, they passed the eye test.
Yeah.
And then saying, because, okay, Coastal Carolina has played 11 games, I think it is, and they're undefeated. They won all 11 games that they've played. And they say, oh, because they've won all 11 games, they're not getting enough respect. Well, Ohio State's played five games.
Yeah.
Like, does it just mean just win all your games and then you get respect?
There's a heck of a lot of hypocrisy there.
I mean, is that the only metric that we have now? Like, I don't know. You hear Nicole Arbach like go on the thing with Gary Barta,
yeah,
and she said she asked the question about, you know, Florida losing to LSU and only drops one spot. Iowa State loses to Louisiana again 14 weeks ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And
they're a top 20 team.
And a top 20 team, by the way. But hey, you will not hear that when they talk about Iowa State. When they talk about Iowa State, they lost to a Sun Belt team. Coastal Carolina beat a top 20 team. Iowa State lost to a Sun Belt team, though.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like two completely different things.
Yeah,
like
a good point.
It's a positive for Coastal, but it's not not anything that even counts for Iowa State. But you'll hear it go on and say, but do the games even count? And it's like, what?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I'm with you.
At this point, Iowa State now.
Obviously not, because Ohio State hasn't played any.
At this point, Iowa State should just leave the Big 12 and then schedule one game a year against whoever they want. They want to know. They're undefeated.
Yeah.
Should be in the college football playoff.
It's stupid. And I just the thing that, like, metrics don't give you either. And I just think it's such – this has always been my grind against the group of five. For what it's worth, I'm probably I'm a sucker for the group of five because I like staying up and watching, like, the Mountain West. And it's actually some of my favorite football. Like the Sun Belt games on a Wednesday, MAC – I love that football because what I find with it, and this is why I've been a proponent, the MAC should never play on a Saturday again. They should own Tuesday and Wednesday night because nobody else is doing anything and they get our undivided attention.
Right.
Those leagues have gotten that for me over the years as a football fan, because when I watch Oklahoma and Texas Tech, I'm watching it in a different way. I'm watching it like an analyst.
Yeah.
When I'm watching BYU and Air Force, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
So I've grown to really love these leagues, but the one thing that I can't get out of my mind is, and this is my same beef with Ohio State this year and why I don't think they belong, is when you play a 10-game or a 9-game Big 12 season, compare that to a 8-game Mountain West season or a 8-game Sun Belt season. It doesn't, the grind isn't the same.
Right.
The week-to-week just battering of your body is not the same thing compared to a Big Ten schedule or a, I'm talking a normal year, not COVID.
Yeah.
Or an SEC schedule or a Pac-12 schedule. And I don't know what they can do about that other than the system is not conducive for them to play. But they also
just have to change.
They also agreed to this system, and they have 6 years left before that contract is up. So they kind of did this to themselves, although I don't know if they had any chips at the negotiating table. I highly doubt that they did. But my point is, like, Ohio State, don't tell me, like, oh, they can't lose to XX. Look what Florida, they were a 24-point favorite, and they overlooked a team, and they got bit. When you only play five games and you have three weeks off between every game, it's really hard to overlook a team.
Yeah.
It's really hard to slip up.
Well, and let me ask you this. Like, when it comes to the Sun Belt, okay, so Louisiana beat Iowa State. Arkansas State beat Kansas State. Coastal Carolina beat Kansas. Okay. Do you think Coastal Carolina goes undefeated in the Big 12?
God, no.
They beat Kansas.
Yeah, no.
So, like, don't sit here and tell me.
Okay. I think Coastal would be Coastal would probably be this year.
West Virginia.
Yeah, middle of the pack Big 12 team.
Does Louisiana go 9-1 in the Big 12?
No, they're middle of the pack Big 12 team.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they would have been better at certain parts, depending on when you catch a Tech, when you catch a. But I also think that, like, if you catch a Tech at a wrong day, they beat those teams.
Well, yeah, and that's like, it's just like when TCU jumps up. TCU was fine this year, jumps up and beat Texas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Kansas State jumps up and beats Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes.
It happens. Like, it
that's
happens
why you have to
in
play
college
the games.
Football. Right.
Yeah.
But when you play Troy and you play, you know, I can't even think of all the Florida International or whoever else, like, in the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
You don't go week by week and it's like, yeah, I think this team could beat us. Well, it turns out last week, Coastal Carolina, they scored the game-winning touchdown with 35 seconds left against a 3-5 Troy team. Troy's 3-5 in the Sun Belt. And you want to sit here and tell me that Coastal Carolina's strength of record is so high? Like,
this will probably offend some people. I don't know if I should say it or not.
How controversial do you want to be? Screw it, dude. Let's go.
I don't think it's that controversial. I think it's just natural. This is my observation of the media after being in it for as long as I have. I think a lot of the national sports writers that we are talking about are very liberal in nature, which is fine. Uh-huh. I don't care what their political leanings are. I think it's natural for them to want the little guy
to be included.
You know what I mean? And that, I'm not even criticizing it.
Yeah.
I think it, you're asking why these national writers constantly are proponents for the group of five. I think it's just naturally by the way that they think.
And I'll also
say, is that fair?
Absolutely.
Because some people are going to accuse me of being.
I get what you're saying.
I really think that is partly.
Yeah.
Part of how because they're the same people in the NCAA tournament time that are screaming the third place Valley team got left out. I mean, yeah, come on.
Well, and
I get it. Like, it is unfair to them.
But let's be real, too.
But it's also the realistic nature of the world.
Those people, when their entire beat is covering college football, you want the best stories.
Coastal's
so, like,
a great
of course
story.
They're going to root for Coastal. Like, of course they're going to root for Louisiana or whoever, BYU. Like, it's a good story, you know? Like, for them, that's a good story. They're like, man, I want to be able to cover this story.
No doubt.
And
no doubt.
I also think that a lot of those people, and we've talked about this a lot when it comes to, like, voting on polls and voting on the Heisman and all that kind of stuff, they don't watch games.
No.
They don't watch games.
Yeah, and that's what's driven me nuts about the national narrative about Iowa State going into this. You can tell that many people who are making these comments have not watched the games.
You can tell the people who do and the people who don't. And, like, there are people out there who still sit there. Like, there's one thing they do on The Athletic. I love The Athletic. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm a loyal subscriber, have been for several years. But they do this thing, like, the 1 through 130 or whatever, like a ranking. And, like, they still won't put Louisiana behind Iowa State because of a game that happened in September.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I sit there and I'm like,
yeah, it doesn't matter who you beat rest of the way.
Right. Like, have you watched Iowa State?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, unfortunately, many of them have not.
Yeah.
Probably.
Like, we're not playing whatever that thing is that Reddit, like r/CFB Reddit does, where they, it's like a game of Risk with college football and you're trying to win the territories. Like, that's not how this works, you know? Like, it's not the transitive property of college football.
Take a deep breath. It's all good stuff the rest of the day, okay? Stansbury and I are just blowing off some steam.
Like Nebraska and Rutgers.
Nebraska and Rutgers, 3 o'clock kick. Big Ten Network. Welcome to the Big Ten, Nebraska. All right. Let's get into Iowa State and Oklahoma, and we'll do that momentarily. Coming up right after this, and we're going to call our friend Jay Jordan, the analyst. Coming up next here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Well, let's welcome him in, Jay Jordan, a longtime contributor to Cyclone Fanatic, good friend of ours. Our Patreon members and premium subscribers have been able to enjoy Jay's analysis leading up to games all season long. You can jump in for that for the 2021 season, of course, if you'd like. And we welcome him now. We are heading down to Jay's neck of the woods in the greater Dallas, what do you call it, the Metroplex down there? Is that what it's called?
It is the Metroplex, the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. I don't even know what the population is anymore. 8 or 9 million strong.
What's like Arlington? Arlington's kind of like your Ankeny, right? I mean, it's a nice place. Nice. Yeah. Is that where all the rich folks live? Like, how do you describe Arlington?
No.
No?
Arlington's mid-cities range. It sits right there directly in between the two. Arlington's, it has nice neighborhoods, but it's pretty ordinary middle class. But it just happens to be, because I think it's equidistant between Dallas and Fort Worth, it's become the attraction for all the sports teams. So you've got Six Flags, you've got all the water parks, you've got stadiums, AT&T Stadium, the Rangers ballpark's there. So it's kind of an entertainment mecca. Down the road from there is Lone Star Park, where you can enjoy horse racing, which I frequent from time to time. So,
well, Jay, we, as much as interesting as the geography of the greater Dallas area is, we didn't get you on here for that. We wanted to talk about Saturday's game between the Cyclones and the Sooners in a breakdown that only you can give us. You seem to be a little bit more bearish on Iowa State. I don't mean that in a bad way. I think you've been a little more skeptical of this team throughout the season, but it did seem like for you it clicked, and like there was a moment where you're like, okay, this team's for real. Can you walk us through that? Like, what did you see from this team to lead you up to that point?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chris, and you're keying in on a lot of my previews. I was bearish with this team early on, and I'll give you the primary reason, just very succinctly, is that Iowa State throughout the press man coverage or combo man coverage, the match quarters type coverage we see a lot or utilized now, and either the offensive scheme struggles with it. You know, I'll date it back to, if you remember the Jacob Park Texas game several years back.
Yeah.
date it back to there where Texas was blitzing. They were blitzing liberally because they were playing press man on the outside, and the route schemes were such that they were later developing without much developing underneath or developing at levels. Therefore, we had pressure, we had forced throws, and we struggled to get receivers open. That has persisted, and we saw that early in the season here. We saw Louisiana come out, and the largest factor in that, or not the largest, special teams would loom large there, but one of the largest factors with the offense bog, and that was the inability of Purdy to make those throws and the receivers to break open and break free from man coverage. The scheme didn't help it very much either, and Iowa State has always struggled with that under Matt Campbell. So I wasn't sure as we played teams that had the ability at in the defensive secondary to play man coverage, and the offensive line was dinged up. I wasn't sure how that offensive efficiency would come into play if you're going to have a repeat of the Louisiana game, or if they were going to be able to make some of the necessary adjustments, and I didn't have great faith that they would. However, the evolution throughout the season and where I started to click is is number one, the offensive line with Simmons coming in, with Rimsburg coming in, really started to click. And now Iowa State is a team that whether you're good against the run or you're not, Iowa State's going to be able to run the ball against you. They're going to find a way, not only because Breece Hall is talented, but because the offensive line is talented as well. That freed up or allowed for some greater efficiency in the passing game, allowed or caused teams to have to play a little bit more zone. And we saw Sean Shaw come along and the passing schemes come along a little bit more to get Brock Purdy into a more comfortable throwing position where he sees the field well. And that season. And then the second thing that clicked is the defense went from our bend don't break, still is very much that, but all of a sudden we started seeing big plays get made. We started seeing opportunistic defense. Ashim Young was a huge part of that. Will McDonald, Jaquan Bailey was a beast all year. We saw Mike Rose put in one of maybe the best linebacker seasons we've seen out of a linebacker at Iowa State this year, and we started seeing big play defense along with efficient offense and a passing game that could take a little bit of pressure off of Hall. And you get that. Now we've got a really, really solid mix, and Iowa State has become a very difficult out for anybody that wants to play against them.
Jay, I think the thing that's really stuck out to me about what Iowa State has been able to do offensively, especially in the last, you know, pod of the season, is it has seemed since like the second half of that Baylor game, Brock has been playing maybe the best that he's ever played at Iowa State. What do you attribute that to? What do you think it was that maybe changed at halftime in that game against the Bears where they came right out and it seemed like a switch just kind of flipped for that group? And especially for Brock, I guess.
It's really a pretty remarkable thing. I mean, you guys are both athletes at some level, have observed sports. Anybody who's played or anything, flipping a switch in the middle of a game and going from poor performance to high-level performance is not an easy thing to do mentally. I don't know other than just to attribute it to Brock's intestinal fortitude and confidence in himself. However, I will say this, that part of what I was talking about earlier, he got more comfortable right there at that game, a little bit before that game. He started to get comfortable with the coverages that he was seeing. But nothing makes Brock more uncomfortable than receiving the ball from center and seeing man coverage, because it's just not throws that he is comfortable making. He doesn't throw a hard enough ball in, likes to throw with anticipation into spots, and though that can be, it's just not something that they're really attuned to. However, Baylor, with the lead, played a little bit more loose, gave him some confidence, gave him some angles, and he started completing some of those tougher passes. And then once you, we do know that when Brock starts to do something well, Brock continues to do things well. And when he got over the hump and started completing some of those tight passes to Charlie Kohler, Hutchinson started grabbing them. Shaw became a factor. Now all of a sudden, you've got Brock getting confidence, and he says, oh, yeah, I can do this. And he never turns his back on it once he gets something under his belt. And I think it may be that simple. It's the type of athlete that he is. And it took him a while this season and through the other seasons to get to where he could understood where to throw those balls, when to throw those balls, and what that coverage was bringing. And it just clicked all of a sudden. I don't have any grip on that, but I do know that, that when Brock gets something balanced, he gets their number. When he gets it, comes his number, he is one of the better players I've seen at being able to exploit it and then apply that knowledge and that success consistently.
Jay, I think something that hasn't been talked about enough this year is tempo. I wrote about this, but it was really early on. I've not followed up on it, but I've been studying it just a little bit leading into the Big 12 championship game. And as far as tempo goes, just plays per game, it's not perfect. I know there are other ways to look at it, but this is a really standard-based stat right now. Iowa State ranks 93rd in the country, all the way down there at 93rd in offensive plays per game at 68.2, considerably less than other years in the Matt Campbell era. This seems deliberate to me for a couple of reasons. One, I think Purdy's getting hit less for a lot of reasons. But two, you mentioned earlier, like, with the defense being able to make big plays. I mean, just think about last year, like, how many interceptions were dropped, how bad they were on third down defense. I don't know. This seems quite deliberate to me, and those inside the program have hinted it to me as well that this was going to be a change that they made this year. But how much have you noticed that in your analysis of the Cyclones this year?
Oh, I think it's significant, but I think it's, and I do think it's deliberate. I love hearing that there's support for that because a big part of the Matt Campbell and really any coach's success is building an identity with your team. And the tempo that is attributable to a couple of factors. One is the shifts that they use, the motion. We've seen that always from Matt Campbell, but it's more deliberate. It's more intricate this year. We saw some penalty problems with that early in the season. It's a little bit more subtle and more sophisticated. So that will slow your tempo down. It's also geared towards the defense revealing their coverage, the defense revealing perhaps pressure and taking a look at that. It also is an aid and a benefit to a younger, less experienced offensive line, being able to pick up on that type of stuff, but also allowing the team as a whole to know what they're facing. So that identity that okay, we're going to be mono-a-mono, we're going to know what you're doing, you're going to know kind of where we are and what we're doing, and we're going to just go beat you, I think has been an identity shift in the team this season. And tempo has something to do with that. They feel less, I think that this season, Coach Campbell felt less overwhelmed from a talent level mismatch, where a change in tempo may catch somebody off guard, may create a matchup or trap somebody in a matchup that would be good for Iowa State and bad for the other team. I think they felt like they did not need that as much this year, that they could line up man-to-man and beat people as long as they were in the right positions and dictating and had some knowledge with regard to what was being revealed to them scheme-wise on the other side. And I think that improved play calling. I think it improved offensive line being synchronous in their efforts. And Yeah, deliberate, identity-based tempo has been a big factor.
What's been the biggest change you've seen in this offensive line? I mean, obviously the personnel is completely different than what it has been in the first 4 years with Matt Campbell, basically all new guys up there. But I mean, how have they been able, you know, when you have two redshirt freshmen starting on one side, and then you got a former walk-on starting at the guard spot on the other, and Sean Foster, I mean, you and me have talked about him plenty over the years. This is a group that I don't think we could have expected to ever be as good as what they've been this season.
You know, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but they really started gelling when Simmons entered the lineup.
I think so, too. Yeah.
I think he was a major linchpin in that. But what you see in the offensive line, you guys, I wrote about it previously, and you guys have heard me talk about it, fit, lock, and finish. Is getting those fits and locks at the start has always been a problem for Iowa State in the Campbell era off the ball at the snap. So you might get three or four really good ones, and then you have a fifth one that gets blown up, or somebody just misses. Or you get three on the front side, miss two on the back side, and you've got problem in penetration and the play scheme. That did not happen this year. As the offensive line evolved, what you saw was synchronous play. And that's what you see with a great offensive line, or a good offensive line in a program that does it consistently year in and year out. And they all seem to get off the ball together. They all seem to fit their blocks together. And then the play is able to develop as it is drawn, because there's an initial fit and it's synchronous. And no one's getting... So even if they're not blowing somebody off the ball 3 yards, if everybody at the line of scrimmage is fit onto their block and you've got a back like Hall behind them and no one's blown up, then you've got an offensive line that's doing its job and you'll make yards. That's what we saw this year. Part of that is talent. Each of these guys that have played this year, Simmons, Remsburg, Schweiger, even Foster, and Foster just developed. He just bloomed this year. Newell's great. When Downing was in there, and Ronald too. They all have great footwork. And I've been saying that in my recruiting reviews of the Campbell era, as I've written and potted about those, is that each of these guys has great footwork, and that footwork is what is required to get you into position to make your initial fit and then lock and drive. And that's what each of these guys brings to the table. You can see it in their high school film. You can see it now as it develops here. So we've got the type of athletes on the offensive line that they've not had before. And they're all young as well, which is a great sign for the future. But yes, that athleticism along with the initial ability to work and get five guys making their blocks at the initial outset off the ball has made all the difference in the play of this offensive line.
All right, Jay, let's get down to it. The Cyclones and the Sooners, round two. The first football game was really good, but it was so early in the season, it's just too hard to draw too many conclusions from that, in my opinion. I think both teams are a lot better than they were then. How do you see this playing out? What are you concerned with? What do you like for Iowa State? Give us your rundown.
I'm not concerned about much in this game. And I'm going to give all the credit to our colleague, Jeff Woody, for putting in the time and effort, and then us having one of our conversations in the nursery about it. But if you go back to the initial Oklahoma game, even early in the season, Iowa State beat itself over and over and over again with penalties and dumb plays. Oklahoma didn't really stop us. And that game was close, but only because Iowa State's mistakes allowed it to be close. Has Oklahoma gotten better since then? Yeah, you put Ronnie Perkins on the defense, you're going to get better. Rattler settled down some. But my reference point for this game is the last time out. Did you guys get to watch that, or have you watched it in the interim?
Yeah, I have. I've watched the game, Mike, four times. I'm insane.
Okay. Well,
that's how I get my daughter to sleep.
Welcome. Well, if you watch that game, Chris, that wasn't an easy win for Oklahoma. Oklahoma didn't look like this an improved, resurgent team.
No,
that they're saying.
I think too. Let me ask you this real quick. As a former player, I think that they actually. I think it was an easy take to go, oh, they lucked out not having to play West Virginia. They get more time to prepare. I actually disagree with that. They looked in that Baylor game rusty. It looked like a team that had had a long way off. I actually think they needed some more time out on the football field. What do you think about that take?
Chris, I love it because you're right. If you look at most of the games around the country, teams that had extra delayed games or an extra week or two because of delays or cancellations. We don't have to look any further than Oklahoma State and Baylor and some of the struggles they had in actually getting a game played. It creates rustiness. You don't get the chance to get into a rhythm. And rhythm is very, very important for football teams, especially offensively. And I couldn't agree more. I don't think that it's a okay, guys are rested, but guys are rusty. Guys haven't been at tempo. No matter what you do, you cannot simulate the tempo of a game in practice. You can get close. You can practice strong, but with today's rules and the way things work and in today's current environment, you can't bring game time tempo to your practice sessions. Therefore, if you're stuck practicing 3 weeks without any game time tempo, things are going to look different when you hit the field. And you might be able to gain that or get it back within a quarter or two of play, but you're going to have some problems with that. So I think that's been seen. I don't think that the extra time has been an advantage for teams when they've been afforded it. So I would agree with you wholeheartedly that Oklahoma looked a bit rusty in the game against Baylor, and I expect some rust in this game, the game or not.
What about the whole aspect of Oklahoma's played in this stadium so many times? I mean, could that maybe equal out the rust?
Full house, but it's not. It's it's just different. And I've wondered this season as I've watched games if just the silent nature, the either no crowd or a small crowd, if that hasn't affected the way they come out and gotten off to a start, if that hasn't affected home field advantage as we've watched games. So, yeah, it's a big place. You guys have been there. It's pretty neat and can be intimidating, but I just don't put a whole lot of weight in that, and certainly not on a Matt Campbell-led team and the way this Iowa State team seems to be about its business these days.
James,
but I want to jump back. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You finish up what you were going to say.
I just wanted to jump back to that Baylor game real quick. Baylor gave Iowa State all kinds of problems too. And Baylor gave problems to people they played. So it's not no shame on Oklahoma that Baylor gave them trouble in that game. But how they gave them trouble, I thought, was really important. Is Baylor got pressure on Rattler. Now, we saw Iowa State get pressure on Rattler in their game. But they were unable to finish. They were a step away from making a lot of really good dominant plays. But Baylor finished it. Baylor did that with four rushers, and which Iowa State does a lot, but Iowa State's been able to get pressure with three this season. I think they might switch and use some of what Baylor used in that game to slow down Oklahoma, which was they would basically unbalance their pressure package. They would bring three on one side and leave one and a second level defender on the other side based on some tendency that they were seeing. But when they would bring three on an unbalanced kind of three guys through two gaps, they would get home and they would finish the play. And it caused Oklahoma problems. That's something Iowa State can do better than Baylor. And so it'll be very interesting to see if the professor dials into that and uses some of that against Oklahoma. And because of that, I'm just not sure that Oklahoma is playing at such a level as people would think, would have you think. And if you take that approach, then you're also taking the approach that Iowa State hasn't improved and that Iowa State isn't playing at a high level. And I'm telling you, Iowa State is dialed in. The score's proven. And those are the same teams Oklahoma played against. Oklahoma's wins against those teams are no better than what Iowa State's were. And I think you're looking at two programs that are kind of at the same place right now.
Definitely. All right, this is the last thing that I want to ask you.
Jay's making me really feel good about this game.
I was going to say, you started bringing up the professor, and I got a little got a little lightheaded.
A little eggplant emoji?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Jay, is it just me, or does every time that you watch Will McDonald rush the passer, does it move a little bit? Because it does for me.
Jeez.
Man. Every time I watch what?
Watch Will McDonald rush the passer.
Jeez.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and then I get full on rock mode when I watch Jaquan Bailey on the other side and then running around on the line. Those three dudes have been great. I mean, they're not just good. We thought they would be good, right? But they have been great, and they're virtually unblockable. Because you watch Will come off, McDonald come off the edge fast, and then you watch Jaquan fold under, and yeah, all of a sudden we've got pressure with three. It's crazy. Because, and then the other guy they got to contain is 310 pounds. So and can run.
Do you think they get pressure with three on Saturday? Because they struggled a little bit to do so in that first outing.
Maybe. It depends on how they choose to play it. So if Oklahoma comes out and Stevenson gets ripped some runs on either some delayed runs or they catch them at the DT counter, then I think they'll lay back a little bit and not bring that pressure with three. They'll put the players in or dial those guys back a little bit. But I think you're going to see pressure with four. I think you're going to see some creative blitz packages, and I think they get home. In fact, I think that's the factor, that's the winning factor for Iowa State, is their ability to create great, consistent pressure up front.
So you're picking Iowa State to win?
I am. I think it's a 10-point game.
Wow.
Whoa. I love it.
I love it. Man, they gave the professor too much time. Gave him too much time to sit around and watch the Sooner offense. That's what I said.
You know, so here's an interesting thing is the initial game plan will be very interesting to watch. Will they come out and play defense fairly vanilla?
That's what they usually do.
And then make it smash. Yeah, that's our usual pattern. Or will they have something dialed up and try to make Oklahoma adjust to them early on? I'm not sure which is going to be the better approach, but it'll be a very interesting dynamic on whether or not they get down early and have to come back, or they jump out and try to hang on.
Jay, thanks for your time. We will see you soon.
Yes, we'll see you soon, and look forward to being with Cyclone Nation once again.
Thanks, my friend. Talk soon.
All right,
Jordan, here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network, picks Iowa State by 10. Jay's always like the kind of the glass of cold water he throws on everybody.
Yeah.
That's kind of his role. Very bullish all over Iowa State.
Yeah.
Iowa State.
That to hear that makes me excited. Makes me excited.
Should make you excited.
Because Jay is always the contrarian.
Yeah.
In the picks.
I'm going to pick Texas.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy, and we're lucky to be able to call him up like that and get some analysis. That was really good stuff. Let's take a really quick time out here and come back and do a quick hit on tonight's basketball game.
Sounds good.
Shall we? He's Jared Stansberry. I'm Chris Williams here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network, a special edition postseason podcast for you. As always, we are presented by our friends at the Iowa Clinic, Wild Rose Casino, the DraftKings Sportsbook at Wild Rose Casino, Graphite Construction Group, and also Fairway Groceries. All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back. Let's do a really quick hit on basketball. Coming up tonight, Iowa State at West Virginia. Cyclones are double-digit underdogs once again. Jared, this is more you. I've given some thoughts. I thought you had a really good column after the game the other night. I guess, you know, my expectations were really low for this team. I didn't think they'd be as bad as they have been so far. I think tonight's a total bloodbath. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know if there could be a worse game for Iowa State to get right now. I'd rather go into Fog Allen and play Kansas than going and seeing Bob Huggins at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other one that would probably be even comparable would be Texas Tech.
Correct.
Just in the sense that, actually, I wouldn't want to play Baylor right now either, but that's...
I don't ever want to play them.
Yeah, that's for different... Except I do like to see Scott Drew. But I just think when you look at what this team's problems have been, and the big one to me is just it's toughness. It's how hard do you want to compete? How hard do you want to get down and dirty and, you know, be the tougher guy than the guy across from you? And Steve Prohm has talked about that a lot. I've written about that a lot. And I just think that when I see what these guys have been able to do offensively, if they're going to win, that's what it's going to take, you know? And who does it better than West Virginia?
Nobody.
Nobody. I mean, that's exactly what they are. Like, they're going to come out and punch you in the mouth. And if you don't come back and punch them back, then you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's going to become a theme because you look across this league, that's what everybody does now. Like, it's not what it was.
It's totally different. It's a really good point.
It's not what it was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Where you go out there and everybody tries to put up 80, you know? Like, these games are in the 60s.
It's kind of like the Big East, the old Big East.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah.
A little bit.
It's just where...
Grittier type dudes. And
when Kansas State can come out and beat you up with three true freshmen in the starting lineup, like, that's not good, you know? And that's where I just think that a switch has to flip for this team where they come out and they make a commitment to being tough, you know? And I don't know how you do that. Like, that's to an extent, that's a personality thing.
Well, that's also why I've been saying, and I do mean this, I'm not, like, I'll really judge this team more in February than I do now.
Yeah.
But man, a lot got taken out of my sails on Tuesday, though.
Yeah.
I thought they would win that game by 10.
I did too. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
They, even in a 30-point loss, showed some glimpses at Iowa where I was like, there's some talent there.
I think that there is talent there.
Yeah, but getting it to...
It's getting it to play the way that it needs to. And again, like, it comes to the fact that, like, because these teams are so good in the Big 12 defensively, you have to be really good on offense, you know?
Yeah, which this team could be good, but I don't know about really good.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where, unless you're going to defend at the same level that they are, you're going to get ran out of the gym. And if it hadn't been for them kind of getting into desperation mode and, you know, K-State kind of going crazy in the second half, they get ran out of their own gym by the team that everybody thought was going to – by a team that lost to a D2 team the week before. And that's where it just – this is – and I told you this 2 weeks ago. I mean, I think I told you this after South Dakota State, that there were things that I was seeing that were concerning to me. And it's – and I know that rebounding margin is not a good statistic, but, like – just watch the way they rebound. That's it's a problem. They don't rebound effectively because they don't go and get the ball. And that's where when you see a situation where it's like, when I talk about competing,
that's a problem.
Well, and I know it sounds ridiculous. Like, and I get that, but that's what I'm
because
saying.
Because they don't go get the ball. No, that's a problem.
And that's why they're so often, even when they do get their hands on the ball on a defensive rebound, it doesn't end up in that guy's hands. It gets either tipped away, and then they somehow will get it back because it gets knocked out by the other team, or a guard will come in and corral it.
Hopefully, like, they shock us tonight, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could. I hope so. But like, I just, there has to be some pretty major changes with this team right now, because it's not going to work moving forward.
I would tend to agree. Hopefully they shock us tonight. I think that's the best way to leave it. So we'll have that. Rob Gray will be all over that thing for you. Connor Ferguson is in Hilton tonight as the Iowa State women will tip off their season in the Big 12.
Oh, they played a Big 12 game.
Oh, yeah, I called that game. They played TCU.
Glad you remember there.
Man, I don't remember much at all from the last, like, 3 weeks. It's just been, like, blah, blah, blah. But it's all good stuff. Connor will be in Hilton tonight, so we will have coverage of everything. And then we start bright and early tomorrow. You can listen to our KXNO show on 8 o'clock tomorrow morning on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. We will also have all of our social media stuff, from the halftime show to the pregame show. The pregame show is probably already up, or it may not be. It depends on when you're listening to this. But really appreciate all of you guys joining us from Dallas. So with that, let's go get a win coming up tomorrow. And for Jared Stansbury, my name's Chris Williams, signing off here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network.